Everybody, this is.
This meeting is being recorded.
Oh, there we go. We're being recorded. This is Council Affairs Tuesday, June 9th, starting at 3. And I just want to say hello to everybody. And we'll start with introductions. And I believe Anna's on here. Yeah, there you are.
Hi, Anna Brenzarella.
She's the other co-chair, by the way.
Co-chair.
Yeah. Bill, go ahead.
Hi, Bill Bloom, HIV Health Services, an ex officio member of the Planning Council.
I love that. Jesse, say hello.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Jesse Brooks. I'm with Primary Care at Home. I'm a new member to the Planning Council.
Great to see you. Natalie.
Yeah, hi. Natalie with HHS.
And Thomas is here.
Almost noble, they've been pronounced.
All right, then Andre.
Hi, Andre Robertson, new member of the council, working for UCSF Stanyan Hospital.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
Manuel.
Hi, everyone. My name is Manuel Vasquez. I'm an HIV Housing Programs Manager, but I'm also a Planning Council member, and I'll be presenting today.
Irma.
Irma Parada, co-chair, and also a member of this committee.
Great. Jan.
Jan Oskar, council member, member of committee. Hello.
All right. And then we have Kira.
Kira, council staff.
And Kat.
Kat, council staff.
I don't think I missed anybody. All right, so then we'll move on to...
I don't know if I missed my name during roll call. Sorry, I was looking at emails, but Nali, council member.
Oh, yeah, I said no, and I didn't hear anything, but I knew you were there.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
We also
we'll review the and approve the June 9th draft agenda.
I think we also have a visitor here. Maybe you wanted to another introduction there.
I thought I went through everybody that connected.
Helen Hale, I think, has joined us as well.
Oh, yeah, I missed her. Say hello, Helen.
Hi, good afternoon, Helen Hale. I'm the Director of Housing Services and HIV Services at MoCD is within my purview, and I'm going to be helping Manuel with our presentation today. Sorry to be
great.
Disturbing
Thank
everyone.
You for being here. Oh, no, that's great. All right, now we'll try the June 9th, 2026 draft agenda. Anyone have any changes or want to move anything? If not, we'll approve that consensus and we'll move on to approving the April 14th draft minutes. Anybody see any changes? If not, then we'll approve that consensus also. Now we'll move on to announcements. Any council members have any announcements? I don't see any little hands.
I have
so,
an announcement slash reminder for everyone in case
go ahead.
In case you haven't turned in your membership renewal application and you are planning to renew, you should have gotten an email from me if that's you. Please go ahead and do so. We are reviewing them on Thursday at the membership committee.
Great. That's an important one. Thank you for doing that. Are there any other announcements from anyone? I don't see any hands, so we'll say no. And public comment, is there any public comment from anybody? I don't think there's any public here. All right, we'll do this quick. Next up, we're going to review the housing update by Manuel, and Helen's going to be here as a backup. All right, go ahead, Manuel.
Okay, thank you so much. And I can share my screen. Give me one moment.
Okay, cool.
All Okay, can everyone see the screen in front of them?
Yes.
Okay, great. Okay, so hi everybody. I'm not new to this group. Welcome. So this is very similar to previous presentations I've given because, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I feel like I've gotten a lot of support and a lot of compliments on the presentation. So hopefully it'll be easy for everyone to understand. It is about 24 slides, but I've done this before and I realize today is just a dry run through. So I'm not going to go into too much detail for each slide. My supervisor, Helen Hale, is here to help answer some questions if y'all have any on some specific slides. But with that, I'm just kind of going to go through each of the slides. I am open to feedback, happy to hear what people think might be more helpful or might engage more towards the end of the month when we do the full presentation. Okay.
Can we use a slideshow so that it doesn't show them on the
Sure.
screen?
Sorry.
Sorry,
Thank you.
only because
No,
I
thank you.
am older and have trouble seeing it.
Sure. Are y'all still able to see it? Did it show?
It's now showing next slide on the side. I don't know how to do. I can't help
Let's see. I know.
you.
Let's see. View.
There's a slideshow
Hit the
tab.
quick
Oh,
slide,
okay. There we
slideshow, and
go.
then you hit enter, and it'll go to the next slide.
Okay.
Right, there it is.
From beginning. Do y'all see just the screen, or do you see the presentation still?
No, we see the presentation still, yeah.
Okay, let me stop sharing. Let me share again.
Are you sh using two monitors, Manuel?
Yes.
The presentation might be on the monitor you're not sharing.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Okay. Okay. Now I'm going to try to share again. Bear with me. Thanks, Helen.
No,
Now,
we
I
can
got
just
it.
move. There it is.
There it is. All
For
right.
my older eyes, that's so much
Okay.
better. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So, yes. So, again, everyone, I usually introduce myself. In my role, I oversee all the HIV housing programs here in San Francisco. Many of them are funded through HOPWA federal sources, but also a general fund. Okay. The learning objectives for today are really to basically understand how HOPWA funds programs and services here in San Francisco and what is HOPWA. So I'll explain the acronym and all that in a moment. Understand differences between HIV housing programs and the referral application process for each of the programs. I get a lot of questions about that. And then also just gain a basic knowledge of the Plus Housing program. You probably heard of Plus Housing. A lot of people hear about it, but they don't really know much about it. And we have had some changes recently. So I'll go into how applicants are selected for assistance and how they can apply. Okay. And then we'll have some time for closing questions and requests. So, as with most presentations, I try to make them engaging. So, there is this little Menti. You all might be able to do it on your phone right now. You just use the QR code. Essentially, I only have three questions, and it's about HOPWA. So, I ask them, what is the jurisdiction of HOPWA? What does it include? Does it include Oakland? Are there some trick kind of questions in there? So, people can make their choices, and then I'll show them the results in real time. And then another question is like, what's the basic eligibility threshold for income? And then I think there's a third question of another HOPWA kind of fun fact. I really only meant to do that to kind of break it up. So hopefully this will be helpful. And usually people like the interactive, like polling and stuff. So this kind of gives you an overview of HIV housing programs in San Francisco. So for someone to be eligible for HOPWA services, and HOPWA stands for Housing Opportunity for People with HIV and AIDS. For people to be eligible for services in San Francisco, they must meet the below criteria. So low income. So this is 50 locally. This is 50% AMI usually, but the national standard is 80% AMI. And so currently that's $108,000, $300. Per person and under, they could be eligible. As you all can understand, San Francisco is very competitive. So even though that's the national eligibility income threshold, we want to make it less competitive for vulnerable people. And so we use most CDs unadjusted. And so that's 50% AMI at $54,550 per one person household. So that's the minimum like income threshold. They can't really make more than that. Proof of HIV status, so letter of diagnosis from a medical doctor. It's pretty standard. They have to currently live or stay in San Francisco because, again, we're funded by HOPWA, which is per jurisdiction. It's not a national, like you can go anywhere, like a Section 8. It is specific to that region. That's how it's funded. And then for tenant-based rental subsidy eligibility, most programs are requesting that someone have a 50% rent burden or higher. Our 50% rent burden is kind of like the threshold we try to get people at, so it's more affordable. Within all these programs, some of the services that we provide, so tenant-based rental subsidies, and these are subsidies that follow the client. They don't necessarily stay in the unit. We have housing legal supportive services. So we have a federal par a partner locally, AIDS Legal Referral Panel, who provides those services. We also offer permanent supportive housing. We have one facility. I'll kind of go into those a little bit later. We have transitional housing, and then we also have care facilities. So care facilities for people, RCFCI stands for Residential Care Facility for Chronically Ill. These are medical facilities, housing facilities that are really meant for people who are very fragile and very vulnerable in a sense. Many of them have multiple diagnoses. They need assisted daily living, things of that nature. And then the TRCF, which is Transitional Residential Care Facility, this is really meant to kind of be a step down from an RCFCI and is really meant to kind of help someone stabilize so that they could eventually live independently. And like I said, I'll go over the programs in a little bit later. We also have what's called project-based subsidized units. And so there are approximately 450 units across the city from various departments providing oversight and funding. And when units become vacant, when those subsidized units become vacant, clients exiting from a care facility are first prioritized. But then I also have the plus housing wait list that I'll go into where people are picked at random through a lottery. And then they're usually sent for referral and placement. Okay. So here are some slides. I'm going to give it to Helen at this point. She's going to give a few of the slides.
So for HOPWA, we actually received funding from a couple of sources for our HIV services in general. But for HOPWA, the fiscal year 26-27 allocation, you can see on the slide that in fiscal year 25-26, we had $7,083,046. In fiscal year 26-27, it is surprisingly, after quite a number of years of reductions, we received an increase. And so you have the amount there at $7,423,670. And that's an increase of $340,624. Our allocation for HOPWA also includes money for San Mateo. So we're not just receiving funds for San Francisco, we also receive funds for San Mateo. So their portion is 928 1,378 of that 7 million of the fiscal year 26-27. And their increase, because part of the increase goes to them, is 42,597. So our San Francisco portion, it comes in at 6,495,292, and our increase is $290,027. Of that, our administrative allowance for per HUD regulations is 194,857. Next slide, please. So, within HIV housing, we have a number of different grants, and I'll let Manuel walk you through the different types of grants. But I want to point out in here that there is a combination of funding. We've provided you context of the different types of funding that goes into the different types of services that we're providing. And when you see to the right, you have the HOPWA allocation, and then you will have GF refers to general fund, and HT refers to housing trust fund. Those are both locally sourced funding for the programs. Of that, when you see when you total that amount, as it says at the top here, where it totals the general fund and the housing trust fund amount, that amount is a contribution that this department has been able to either we've received it through advocacy or we ourselves have increased the amount from our own department budget since 2012 when the HOPWA program came to our department specifically to run the services. So it's an increase of a close to $5 million that have come in that we've successfully managed. But if you want to take them through the different areas, or are you going to do that later, Manuel?
I'm going to do that later in more
Okay.
detail. Yeah.
So as you can see, so we have the rental subsidies and supportive services. That is generally general fund or locally sourced funding, as you can see to the side. Those are what was referenced in the earlier slide, where folks can come and they need an additional subsidy because their rent burden is above 50%. So they may have a unit, they may live in a current unit, but their rent burden is quite high, and we know that that will has the potential for them to be destabilized and potentially move toward homelessness. So we have a specific general fund subsidy that allows folks to receive a smaller subsidy to be able to bring the rent burden down to 50%. And then also in this category is our supportive services that will support the next program that I'm going to talk about. Then we have our residential care facilities. We have transitional housing, as well as you can see, San Mateo is there. And then we have our legal services under ALRP and Derrick Silver, which is permanent housing. Next slide, please. So something that doesn't get talked about in the community very much is that there is actually a federally subsidized tenant-based rental subsidy program, a TBRA program. That is part of the HOPA allocation that comes to us is that, and it was managed by the Housing Authority years ago. It was managed by HSA, and then HSH. It's come to MoCD. So part of our allocation each year goes toward managing what is effectively a Section 8 tenant-based voucher program, but specifically for folks living with HIV. And so that is an internal program managed by our department. So we have staff specifically assigned where they do eligibility screening, they do annual recertifications, they work with landlords. Our department pays landlords a federally, through HOPA, it's HOPA dollars, a subsidy, and the tenant pays 30% of their income. We have 160 folks that are enrolled in this program. Many of the households, or most of them, live in market rate housing. As with any Section 8 program, they have the similar HIV regulations in terms of eligibility. The difference, of course, is that one member of the household needs to be HIV positive. Catholic Charities, as I mentioned, has a supportive services component for that. And each year, each one of the households has to go back through eligibility and recertification. The unit has to pass HQS inspection, which we also administer. And then a new housing assistance plan is set up with the landlords. So on their annual basis, for whatever is their enrollment into the program, we do this new process through, and a new housing assistance plan comes up with the landlords. What ends up happening with this program, as you can imagine, knowing the market that we have here, so every year landlords are allowed to ask for a rent increase. Some of our households may be living in units where they have accessibility needs, or there are things going on in the building, the neighborhood, wherever they were living. The most common thing is for medical reasons that folks are asked to move to a different unit. Sometimes it may be that they need a live-in aid, or something is going on and they need to get to a larger unit, maybe even a downside into a smaller unit. So households move. When they move, invariably that means that they're going to be moving to a unit with a higher contract rent. And then, of course, other reasons that their program's costs go up is because there are income changes for the household. So if a household's income goes down, then our subsidy has to increase. The projected increase for this program, because we track it year to year, is about $313,562, which is a $23,000 and plus increase over the additional money that is coming into HOPWA this year. So any increase that's coming into HOPWA is directly supporting a program to ensure that 160 households do not move toward becoming homeless. And I give you at the bottom there we're on track to have spent this year, as opposed to what the program will be in fiscal year 26-27. Next slide, please. So sort of total this up for you. We have grants coming in at this amount for HOPWA. We have this amount coming in for our tenant-based rental subsidies. We have this much for administration, and the total cost is going to be $7,447,205 for fiscal year 26-27, which is an actual projected gap of $23,535, which means that the department will have to scramble to figure out what we're going to do to be able to meet that gap before the end of next year. In addition, of course, we have local funding sources, and that goes directly to grants that are administered through MoCD when we put our RFP on the street. But the total HIV services funding is $12,381,069. So as you can see, we are incredibly committed to ensuring that HIV services is fully funded and supported. I also would like to share that over the years, with a reduction every year in HOPWA, when there has been a reduction in HOPWA, we have not reduced the TBRA program. We've continued to make sure that we have our federally subsidized households continue to be on those programs. And over the last couple of years, we have made no cuts to HIV services. This department has been committed to ensuring that our HIV programs remain fully funded when we are given instructions by the mayor's department, mayor, because there is a need to have cuts. HIV services has not been part of the conversation because folks know that I feel very strongly that all of our programs are supporting our very vulnerable households to remain stably housed. And so therefore, we have not really had our programs be in the conversation around cuts to programs. So anyway, I think that concludes what I was going to say. Thank you.
Yeah, and so on that note, I don't know if we want to maybe ask for questions or should I just go through the rest of the PowerPoint for y'all? Just go through the rest. Okay, I'm just going to go through the rest then. Okay, so this next slide kind of talks about our outputs. So essentially, our deliverables from all of our HIV housing programs. And so people like to hear the numbers. And so here are some data points relating to service utilization and housing placement for fiscal year 25-26. So we have the RCFCI, TRCF. So those are the care facilities. I just kind of highlight the placement and exit numbers. We also have our plus housing wait list. And I'll go into detail about these, but these are just kind of the outputs. And maybe this slide's better at the end. But anyway, those are the total number of applicants we received, the total number of rental subsidy referrals from Plus Housing, as well as subsidized unit placement that I mentioned is through a lottery. And so I kind of just sum up all of that of how we serve everyone amongst all of our services. So rental subsidies, permanent supportive housing, transitional housing, and then care facilities, making up approximately 400, 542 people that we serve. So then I go into how to refer a client for services. So if you have a client that could be assisted through one of the services I mentioned or programs I mentioned so far, it's really best to contact the program directly. Clients will need to provide the following documents at time of enrollment, which is pretty standard. So for any HIV services, HIV letter of diagnosis or proof of HIV status from a medical provider, and then usually most recent income documentation to make sure that they're meeting that threshold. And that usually includes if they're receiving some kind of assistance, whether that be disability or general assistance or something like that, a benefit award letter from the last month dated, or their most recent two bank statements showing deposits to accounts, things like that. And then if they have a job, then also a pay stub or whatever that might be. I want to also pause there just to say that we really are a low barrier programs. That's how we run here in housing services and HOPWA and HIV is we really want people to get the services. So if we can work with a client to figure it out. So for instance, many of our clients, they may some have jobs as like a masseuse or they're independent workers. We will take an affidavit. We'll take whatever documentation we need to prove that they have the income and to get them into a program. So I do want to highlight that because I think that's something we've really focused on in our policies and procedures over the last few years to really allow clients to meet them where they're at before, so they can get services. So as I mentioned, I think it's best to contact the program directly. So these are all of the programs that I mentioned earlier. And this is a point of contact. I usually tell people to save this slide. Or to print this out or to email it to their staff because it's really handy to have on spot whenever there's someone's trying to refer a person or someone just wants more information. But essentially, these are the program contacts with phone number and email for each of the programs. Now I kind of go into more detail about each of those programs. So Our only permanent supportive housing facility is Derek Silva. It's 20 Franklin Street with HOPWA and HIV. It's a 64-unit permanent supportive housing. I kind of talk about the service providers. It's Mercy Housing. And I also talk about the services that are provided at those facilities. Brandy Moore House is also a transitional supportive housing facility. The 11-unit facility located in Western Addition. Rafiki Coalition is the service provider, and people are usually staying there from 1 to 2 years to kind of get themselves stabilized as well. Then I move into our rental subsidies and supportive services. So I go kind of down the line. So our TBRA program, Helen kind of mentioned that, which stands for tenant-based rental assistance. Again, this is the program that helps people with a subsidy, and it follows them to wherever unit they pick, and it has to be in San Francisco. So we have a service provider that provides supportive services, and that's Catholic Charities. But as Helen mentioned, Mo City also administers TBRA. Then we have our tiered subsidy program. So TSP for short. The service provider is Catholic Charities, and this is a general funded contract, so not HOPWA. The reason I point that out is because it's less restrictive, and we were really excited about this program because, as the name says, tiered subsidy. We realize to be a good steward of the money and the funding for all everyone, we want to make sure it stretches. So not everyone needs the 30% of their income towards rent, the deep subsidy. Some people can do a 50%, whatever they can actually contribute. So there are clients in this program. There are approximately 160 people enrolled currently that come in at paying either 30 or 40 or 50% of their income, as long as we work with them to see what they can realistically afford. And that way we can provide more funding for more people. Then we have a Second Start, which is a time-limited 1-year partial subsidy program. This is a standard set amount that's a given to clients that are enrolled in this program. And this program has been around for a very long time. It's also a SPNS, or a Special Project of National Significance program. Catholic Charities is the service provider. And usually it's meant to be a transitional program for people who are going back to work, or for people who are trying to like go into the work field, but also go back to school, any kind of rehabilitative services. So it's really meant to kind of help someone stabilize as well. And then we have AIDS Legal Referral Supportive Services. So they provide access to free legal assistance for persons living with HIV/AIDS that threatens to impact their health and housing. And the services can include anything from counseling, consultation, and direct representation in housing, benefits, employment, and family credit matters. Now I'm going to talk about our CARE facilities. So those really long acronyms that you heard earlier. So RCFCI stands for Residential Care Facility for Chronically Ill. Something to note that RCFCIs are licensed by the state of California, so they do have to follow regulation. And they are the high needs care facilities that I mentioned earlier. So they're very expensive to run because we do have to have nursing staff on site. They are providing 3 meals a day. They provide medication management, assisted daily living. So it is a time intensive program. So there are two of those that are currently in San Francisco. And then we have three what's called transitional residential care facilities. And I mentioned that these are meant to be a step down to kind of help people stabilize. Due to licensure, so RCFCI, people who are staying at RCFCIs, it's based on the care plan. So if someone is not so typically, usually people are only at these facilities for a year. But let's say they have a setback or something happens, their care provider and their care plan will dictate why they need to stay there. That's the whole reason they're in the facility. I'll go through about eligibility in a second, which is kind of particular. But essentially, we wouldn't want someone to, have a setback. So, we do work with providers, but typically people are usually there for about a year. And those facilities are Maitri, which is a 15-unit building in the Castro. The service provider is Maitri. And essentially, they also provide hospice, they provide on-site meals, recreational facilities. This one is a kind of a unique facility in that it also provides trans recuperative surgery bedding as well. So someone who's going through transitional surgery can also stay at Maitri as well. And they also do provide hospice. The other RCFCI is Peter Claver. It's a larger building. It's 35 units and it's in the Western Addition. But again, it provides all those high needs care services. And so the service provider for that is Catholic Charities as well. And then we have the TRCF. So typically, if someone gets referred to a transitional residential care facility, they don't have to have come from an RCFCI. The model is really set up to help someone stabilize their housing. So we do have people who come directly from homelessness and are referred to a TRCF. And at these TRCFs, they are similar to an RCFCI, but they don't have medication management. They don't have nursing staff on site, and they provide limited meals. They actually also have an independent living curriculum that people are asked to join and be a part of. They also provide mental health support and case management on site. These are more like communal style living, so they do have to share a bathroom and a kitchen, but they're really great facilities. And so those are Richard Cohen, which the service provider is Mission Action, Leland House, which the service provider is PRC, and then Assisted Care, which is a youth a TAE facility. The service provider is Larkin Street Youth Services. Now I'm going to move into the Plus Housing waitlist. So the Plus Housing waitlist, it really is a place where anyone who is seeking housing that's HIV positive in San Francisco can reach out to and request assistance. Primarily in the past, there were two different avenues that people could apply for assistance. Some are wanting referral to a subsidy, like a tenant-based subsidy. And then there are people who are exiting transitional housing that really need a unit that's already subsidized. So they need placement to a subsidized unit. So the Plus Housing waitlist is a referral list, like I said, for anyone who meets the eligibility that's mentioned here, but also in need of housing. And so again, we really like to keep it San Francisco, but we will have some opportunities in the future for people who may be moving and things like that. But they have to be HIV positive and their annual income needs to be at the 50% AMI that I mentioned earlier, which is $54,550 for a one person household. How are people selected? Because people hear it's a wait list, there's a lot of people on it. Essentially, to be fair and equitable, we don't really prioritize people based on medical need or things of that nature. As I mentioned, if a person is exiting an RCFCI or a TRCF, they are prioritized. So that's the one caveat that people who are exiting those facilities, because we need those beds, because there are people behind them and they're on a wait list, we do give them priority for any placement to a subsidized unit. But many times, and actually currently, I'm having to make some referrals to two bedrooms, for instance. So we need a two bedroom household, which you don't really see at the RCFCIs and TRCFs. They will be selected from random through the lottery. And so only applicants that are selected for assistance will be contacted. That's a really important thing because I think when people apply, they get a confirmation number. It's an online application. We also have paper, but online is preferred. And then they get a confirmation number and they think, oh, it's first come, first serve. Even though on our website, we're very thorough in explaining that. Also, like I said, previous, we were able to refer people to subsidy programs, but now why have a middleman? Essentially, I was kind of the middle person. It would be delayed. And I wouldn't always know the status of every subsidy program in the city, right? I would just refer them. To make it much easier and to cut out the middle person, essentially, we now have a website that's listing all of the tenant-based subsidy providers in the city, such as San Francisco AIDS Foundation, Catholic Charities, a bunch of them. They're all right there so that either case manager or the client themselves can actually find it and they can contact the program directly and understand what the capacity is there room for new enrollments, and what's eligibility. Because those things changed a lot, as you can imagine. And in my role, I'm not at San Francisco AIDS Foundation. I'm not at Catholic Charities. I'm here, and it's hard for me to keep up with all the updates that are happening. And we want to provide good customer service, right? So we're also, I think, in San Francisco in general, we're really trying to help people help themselves. You know, we're really trying to create independence. So I kind of go over what that looks like. I do kind of mention if a person identifies as homeless, we do have to refer them to our HSH, our Homeless and Supportive Housing Department, because that department is intended to serve homeless people. But we understand that not everybody's prioritized. And so a person could come back and let's say they're couch surfing or doing something of that nature. Maybe they're in a treatment program. That's transitional housing, right? There's a time they have to move on. And so they can apply as a transitional housing applicant and they would be put in that lottery. But again, the lottery is not a guarantee. And then for anybody who has any questions about Plus Housing, they can always email plushousing@sfgov.org. So now I usually also try to break it up and get engaging. So I do have this case study that I present that I feel like mirrors most common client situations for a lot of the people in the audience, whether they're a nurse, whether they're a doctor, whether they're a social worker, case manager. They probably understand this, and I usually outline some questions to help them think through. I'm also going to be providing what's called a housing assessment. It's a one-page form that kind of goes through the ins and outs of housing navigation and how to find a unit. It breaks it down, and it's very tangible. It's a very tangible document that can be given to a client, and they can even do it on their own. But it's also helpful for case managers in terms of follow-up and making sure the client has things to do and the case manager has things to do. It spells everything out. Excuse me, sorry. But essentially, I'm going to ask people in these groups. So I'm going to break people into groups of four or five. Everyone seemed to like this last time and they thought it was really, really helpful. But I have everyone break up. We have the case study. They talk amongst themselves. They complete the form. And then we, as a, like, then there's only four or five groups. Then we'll hear from each group as to what they did, what their situation was, and I can give my perspective, but this is really helpful because, you know, we're all a village. You know, we really shouldn't be working in silos. And I think that the more people hear about how they troubleshoot or the how they tackle problems in a creative way is really helpful. So this is really meant to kind of break up my lecture and then also provide tangible information. People will walk away with a tool, you know, things of that nature. So now I go into the differences between the RCFCI and the TRCF. I don't necessarily need to go into that a lot because of time. And I already kind of gave you the overview. So RCFCIs are really meant for people who have high medical needs, very fragile. And again, people who need like medication management, on-site nursing, things like that. It is state licensed, so they have to follow their licensure regulation. It's congregate living. It's a little more expensive than a TRCF because of all the medication management and all the other things they provide. So the cost is 60% of monthly income towards programs and services. I say that though, in that programs will work with individuals if they have a hardship, a financial hardship, or if they say, you know, I really can't afford that. We know that someone or some of them that are referred have their own apartment and they want to keep that. So we work with them to figure that out. So yeah, so that's kind of goes gives you an overview of everything. And then this kind of goes into how the referral happens. So this is really helpful from the get-go so that people are not just, you know, wasting time or are not really knowing. It's very transparent. This is what's required for someone to be referred to an RCFCI, and it does need to come from a medical provider or a care provider in some way. And again, it's best to reach out to the program directly for any questions, but I have their contact information here as well as on the other slide. Okay. This kind of goes over the intake and application process. The reason that I'm kind of hitting all the details here is because the RCFCIs have complained that there are providers and there are people who send information and it's not complete. And it makes their job harder to get a person into the facility. So they want to be very clear about what's expected from the get-go, with any provider. This is really meant to be an informational slide. Then I break down what's a TRCF, a transitional residential care facility. And so I kind of break that down, you know, the differences, the they can stay up to 2 years rather than 1 year. But again, none of these are meant to be permanent housing. And then I go over how to refer. And this is really helpful whenever we send out the slide deck so that people can have this at their desk, like case managers, even clients, they could have all this information and they don't have to go around searching for everything. We want to make sure it's transparent and that people feel like they can access the information. And then I talk about the intake and the application process. And then I switch over to some really exciting news. So coming down the road, we do have some affordable housing that's being developed, and that there are going to be some set aside units for people living with HIV. So it's really exciting, everyone, because it's also a part of our strategic plan that we would gain more units rather than either losing them or maintaining. So each of these developments, each of these addresses, I've listed the amount of units that will be provided that'll be set aside for HIV positive people, and they will be placed either through prioritization with an RCFCI, but more than likely through the Plus Housing waitlist because they do have to have an income qualification. A lot of people who exit from the medical facilities, they don't, or they have very limited income, so they may not be the best candidate for this, but we may be. If we find a subsidy, we can figure it out. We want to allow everyone the opportunity, but I'm just kind of giving you all an overview. And then on the very far right, it mentions when we expect to start leasing up. I'm already meeting with a lot of asset managers here and project developers that are getting these sites started and constructed. 1515 South Venice will be the first one. And they are already kind of getting the constructions getting going. And so we will have some lease ups. And so more details to come with that. But this is really exciting news. And then I close it out with just questions and requests. So if anyone has any questions, it's my contact information plus housing. And that's it. So, okay. Anybody have any? Thank you. It's always a lot whenever you're going through housing, and I feel like I just don't even say enough. But anyway, thank you all so much for your attention. Any questions, any feedback?
Where does the Kinney Hotel fall in this? Because a
So the
lot of
Kinney, yeah. The Kinney Hotel is like transitional housing, and
right.
it's also funded through HOPWA, but it's funded through a SPINS grant. So those are competitive grants, and Lutheran Social Services is the
Okay.
direct HUD grantee. We MoCD does not get direct HUD funding for the Kinney. That's actually through Lutheran Social Services, and they manage that building. But that building is also usually used for more immediate housing options for people who are coming out of incarceration
Right.
or have much more challenging experiences getting housed. They will usually be placed over in the Kinney Hotel. It's a great facility. We do have a relationship with Lutheran Social Services. I know their staff very well in the program contact. So if people do have questions, which sometimes they come up, I'm able to refer them and make
Okay.
that connection.
Thank you.
Yeah, good question. Any other questions?
I have a
No, it
question
was really
just
good.
about like
But go ahead.
this historical context, like because it's only San Mateo and San Francisco. What, why is Marin County like separate? Because I know that the Marin Housing Authority receives it directly from CDPH, but I'm just curious why it wasn't kept together with the EMA, if anyone has that like historical knowledge.
I will say, I don't know if I have the historical knowledge, but I've heard it talked about in many spaces. So, from what I've understood, I think it might have been a decision by Marin. I will say that Marin has very limited housing services. And, even on this council, when we've talked about what are the prioritization of services, housing's never really the prioritization for Marin. I think a lot of people have said, well, because providing housing is very limited to only those clients. It's not a service that they could provide to everybody. So they didn't feel it was really a priority. I also will say, and this might be someone on the call, but historically there it was included, but I think because San Quentin and things of that nature, the population's different if you encapsulate the county. Helen's nodding her head. Helen, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, no, that happened. It happened quite a number of years ago, and actually, there has been conversations with our HUD representative about the continuation of San Mateo being part of the San Francisco allocation, because it, every county is different, and we count our new infections and those kinds of things and how we're allocating the money differently. Marin is a little different beast. We are often receive. Folks that are in Marin reaching out into San Francisco trying to get assistance with trying to find housing and wanting to stay in Marin. And unfortunately, particularly with HOPWA dollars, the actual assistance we give them, they need to actually reside in San Francisco. So that's it's very, very tricky. But yeah, we don't really have an influence over how the allocations go. It comes out of the federal government. And just transparently, at this point, I really don't want a lot of attention on us from the federal government.
Yeah, good question, all. Thank you. Chuck, did you have a question?
No, I was just saying that was a great presentation.
Oh, thank you so much. I really
Yeah.
appreciate that. Good. Well, again, I'm open to suggestions to feedback about, how it's read, all that stuff. I'll try to add some more. I've gotten feedback around maybe graphics and adding more of those types of things in there to break it up. So I'll definitely try to do that as well. But I think everyone really likes the case study. And that's probably like a good 20, 20, 25, 30 minutes that we dedicate. And that's great because everyone gets to talk about their challenges, right? And then they bring up questions and then they all kind of work on it and then they bring it to the group and then we all discuss it. So,
All right, well,
okay.
thank you for doing this.
Yeah, no, of course. Thank you.
All right, and so we're going to move on to the carry forward allocation. Kira, was Bill going to do that?
I can share my screen, or do you want to share your screen, Bill?
I why don't you share, and if not, then I will. I have it. I can pull it up real quick.
Okay,
But if you have
perfect.
it ready, let's go that way.
I'm just going to jump in and say, Helen, I don't think we need to be in the meeting anymore, so we're going to hop off. Thank
Okay.
you so much.
Thank you.
I
Can't believe they wouldn't didn't want to see this part. Okay, welcome everybody. It's a pleasure to be able to present this to you. So this happens once a year. These are monies that are not expended in the various contracts and MOUs that HHS has with Ryan White Part A funding. So it's a little bit of a tricky name because it's not doesn't carry over to the next year. It has to be expended this year. And they used to be called unfunds. So these are dollars that kind of came out of contracts. And in general, the amount fluctuates, I think low of about 200, high of about 650 one year. And so every year we do an assessment to see what's looking like it's not going to be expended and we bring it to you. So this is the dollar amount. And so I'll advance the next slide and kind of give a little bit more about the parameters of how this would be expended. So I also just want to say this is a little bit different than a presentation. So at the end of this, you all have the opportunity to either I've in past years been asked to send a motion for your guys' consideration, and then you can either accept it, reject it, or of course do whatever modifications you as a committee want to do. So this is just showing you the different categories that you all provide decisions on. And so similar to the to with the all of the Part A funds, the carry forward funds also go through different service categories. So you'll be allocating it or for these different service categories. So if you go to the next slide, it actually shows the ones that we are proposing that you fund. So it's the same slide there. So some mental health, some food delivered meals, some other professional services, in this case legal, and then emergency financial assistance. Next slide. So this gets into the different categories of funding. And after this, I'll explain a little bit why the logic we use to come up with these dollar amounts as well as these categories. So the first one is emergency financial assistance, since and the amount we're recommending is $120,000. And you can kind of see this is for very low-income people, and it's emergency grants. Focused a lot around maintaining housing, could also be some other sorts of things just related to not having enough income. Or bills that are too hard to pay or co-pays and that kinds of things. And that's administered by an agency that has a lot of experience with this. And you can see the grant amount below under units of service. It would be $700 per grant to 154 clients. So the second is home bank food delivered meals. And the amount we're recommending is $207,000, excuse me, $207,593. And this is the Ryan White Part A Minority AIDS Initiative funding. That's what the MAI is. It's a kind of a subset of this funding. And you could see this is to provide food, additional pantry services, and home delivered meals. It will be 120 clients receiving 12 meals a month at $15 per meal for 5 months. And I'll explain why that time frame when we get to the next section. But that's it for a total of 107,593. And then for another 167 clients, it would be 4 bags, kind of groceries bags per month, estimated at $30 a bag for 5 months is 100,000. Next slide, please. So mental health training. So 2 trainings. One is trauma-informed care that's focused on long-term survivors and aging. It would be 5 trainings. They would be recorded. And the training modalities would both be in person and remote. And then the second is kind of training the trainer's curriculum. So this is developing a curriculum, It's kind of a mutual aid model of clients helping clients living healthfully, kind of peer-led groups such as what used to be in Positive Force. And so this would kind of be HIV and aging would be the focus of this. So the units of service don't lend themselves usually for training contracts. It's described in a different way in terms of number of hours, but the products would be a curriculum and then a training offered 5 times. The total again on that is 49,302. And then the last is other professional services, legal stipends, $20,000. And so this would support legal interns that do case, they're usually either newly minted lawyers or folks in law school. They do the case research and client interviews to better address their legal needs. A lot of the work they do is focused on housing eviction support work. So they're not limited to that, but that has been in past years when the Planning Council has funded this. This has been kind of the majority of the work that those interns have done. Okay, and so again, no units of service, it's paying a stipend, so the period is a month on that. So if you want to go to the next slide, please. Okay, so just to understand a little bit more about the process, we in HHS reviewed, we went through the following kind of questions of ourselves before we put them forward to you all. One is an allowable HRSA service category, and I will add the caveat here that our program officer has to approve after you, if you approve this or whatever you all do approve. Then the program officer does a second review, so that's subject to HRSA HAB approval. We really wanted to focus on services that go directly to clients, so there's not additional admin costs. It's really services for clients. These are all services that you guys have approved in pretty much similar amounts in the past, so there isn't a radical departure on any of these. And the last thing is we want to make sure that the agency's going to expend this funding. Because the way it works is you all approve in June how you want the money to be allocated. Then we submit it to HRSA, and then they have a month to return it or longer if they need it. Then we have to modify contracts, so it ends up being a 4 or 5 month period, and these funds all have to be expended before the new fiscal year, the new Ryan White fiscal year, which is the 1st of March. So these funds kind of become available September, if we're lucky, and run through at the end of February. And we are definitely want to spend them all because if we don't, one, we just return the money to the feds and it gets swept up for other things, not HIV. Because if we have over a certain amount of unallocated funds, then we run the risk of having a reduction in subsequent years of funding, because the logic being we don't need to spend it all or unable to spend it all. So maybe what I'll do is I'll read the motion and then stop and allow folks to ask questions. If you all like this as a motion, one of you would recommend it, and then it would need to be seconded and then discussion. But I will read it and then answer questions, and you guys can go from there. So HHS, HIV Health Services, that's DPH, San Francisco DPH, recommends to the HIV Community Planning Council that it draft a motion to approve the $396,895 San Francisco EMA eligible metropolitan area, Ryan White Part A and Ryan White Part A MAI, Minority AIDS Initiative. These carry forward dollars on the following service categories: emergency financial assistance in the amount of $120,000. Food bank and home delivered meals, $207,593. Mental health in the amount of $49,302, and legal services in the amount of $20,000. A lot of information, so I'm happy to break it down if people have questions.
And I do want to clarify that this is actually already a motion on the floor, and it's coming from community engagement.
Oh, thank you much. Yes, I forgot because I was not at that meeting. It is now a motion. Thank you for that clarification. So it does not need a second. It just needs your all discussion, I believe. And then if you guys then vote on the motion if you like it.
Any questions for Bill?
I'm sorry, was that a question?
No, I said, are there any questions for you?
I think it looks great. Oh, it's something that works.
So, Kira, the next step is.
So if everyone is okay with that, then I will go ahead and do a roll call vote for this. So I have Anna Branzola.
Yes.
All right. I have Jan Oskarsson.
Yes.
Nali.
Yes.
Thomas Noble.
Abstain.
Chuck Adams.
Yes.
And then I have Andre Robertson, Jesse Brooks, and Bill, who are abstaining.
Right. We can't. We aren't official members to
Yes.
vote yet. So. But we would have said yes. I would have said yes.
All right. So this motion then goes ahead and passes, and this will go next to the membership committee. So,
Cool.
yay!
All right. So outside of that, the next thing on the agenda would be the day of the next meeting is July 14th, 2026, from 3 to 4:30 p.m. And outside of that, it's time to adjourn. Everybody have a great day. And
All
thank you
right.
for being here.
Thank you.
Thank
All
you,
right.
everybody.
Thank
Good to see
you.
you all, baby.
Adios, people.
Bye.
Bye. Have a good day.